The following is an encore episode of Hour One of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
To do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day. How's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Going to work, don't wanna go.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. I don't know what happened with that version of Good Morning, but excised from it was the Beatles crying, good morning, good morning, good morning. And I wish you a very good morning, whether you're listening across the United States. It's 6 a.m. in Los Angeles. It's 8 a.m. In Mobile and Fairhope and all those good parts of Lower Alabama. It's the afternoon here in London. It's evening in Moscow and Eastern Europe. And did you know it's nighttime in Australia? It's hard to believe, isn't it? They're all going to bed and we're all just getting up and getting going. So it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, depending on where you're listening to us. And I hope you're listening to us somewhere. And wherever you are, you're welcome. You really are. And I tell you who was very welcome this morning. My boiler man turned up. I've been keeping you abreast of the saga of the broken boiler, the frostbite, Scott of the Antarctica, my wife and I battling against the elements, the coldest night of the year we battled through. And then he turned up and it was like the end of a story, you know, where the cavalry arrive and save everybody. So he turned up and he fixed it and all is well. I mean, we had to use blow torches to unfreeze it and pickaxes to get at it, the boiler that is. But we did in the end and it is now up and running. So I'm feeling sort of thawed out a little bit in this cold spell. But you know what? Now you're going to think I'm absolutely crackers, as we say, crazy as you would say, right? But I didn't feel cold at all. In all seriousness, I never felt cold at all for the last 24 hours, 48 hours. And it was an extremely cold snap, as we say over here. And the radio broadcasters kept talking about how cold it was and how you had to have heat up. We didn't have any of that. And I wasn't cold. And I think I know why. But to find out, you're going to have to phone in and ask me. 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. Now, remember, you can ask the question. You may not, well, you may be surprised at the answer, but it may be, not be the answer that you thought it was going to be. You may need something else to understand this answer. Anyway, good morning to you all. Now, coming up in the next segment, I'm delighted to say that we have Karen Eula, who is a fiction author and an editor and a singer and all sorts of good stuff. But she's also a bit of an expert on fairy tales. And I thought in this run-up to Christmas, in the period of Advent, it'd be good to find out about some fairy tales, which, you know, the family could enjoy, young children could enjoy if you're listening with young children. What is the state of fairy tales today? And what would be good for Christian Catholic families to read together, maybe during the coming season? So, I'm looking forward to speaking to Karen. I've interviewed her for the newspaper many years ago over email. I've never spoken to her, but she's one of those women that I enjoy speaking to because she likes Gothic horror and I'm sort of fascinated by that myself. So I'm looking forward to speaking to her. And just to give you the heads up, well, first of all, I have to make an announcement. And it's great sadness that I have to make this announcement, but unfortunately, this is how it is. And that is that today is the last day of the Turley Frequency. That's this week, though, because next week we've got a whole stack of great guests lined up, including Paul Badd, who is another great historian and specialist in arcane aspects of Christian history. He's coming up on Monday. And we've got Eleanor Nicholson, who's going to be great fun. She's another Catholic author, fiction writer, and also delves into the Gothic and all that sort of things. In particular, she writes books about werewolves and Catholics. Can you believe it? I know, I've written a book about vampires and Catholics, so we should get on like a house on fire. I'm really looking forward to speaking to Eleanor next week, which reminds me. Well, it's funny you should say that, Mike. Here. I'm amazed how you can get your voice that high. But it's amazing you say that, because story time today involves a wolf and a moon. But you're going to have to stick around for that. That's coming up at the final segment. You know, Mike is
amazing.
And
a bunch of wild dogs, right? Right.
You know, there is nothing that Mike can't do with his voice. Do you know what I mean? He can beat wolves, dogs. Yesterday he was singing
vocal
opera.
Surgery.
I mean, it's incredible. He plays piano in that studio. I mean,
We have fun.
If you're having trouble getting through, you know it's because Mike has got a full orchestra going and he's the only person playing all the instruments. But we have a great show lined up for you next week, but we've got a great show today for you. And of course, we've got at the top of the hour, Divine Mercy. Come on. You know you want to call in. I'm looking at you. You know you want to call in. 888-928-0881. Don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed, right? If you call in, I promise just to keep shouting at you until you feel completely calm again, okay? So don't worry about that. No, seriously, call in. It's not a problem. But if you don't want to call in, that's okay too. Just text 251-928-2111. Because I'm getting the impression, you know, I'm seriously getting the impression that the Alabaman people, the people of southern lower Alabama, are very special. Let me explain. They are people who suffer in great silence. They never complain. They never moan. They never say, pray for me. They keep their sufferings and their torments to themselves, and they just offer them up to the Lord. I admire you. I admire you greatly. But you know what? This radio station is here to help you carry that load. So feel free to avail of that. Top of the hour, Divine Mercy. And as I say, we've got story time with wolves and moons and a story which you won't believe, but it's true. They all are. They all are. Now, listen, this show is for you. And one of the other joys is for you to communicate with us. We had a wonderful communication the other day from Patricia, also known as the Eagle, White Eagle. And we love getting comments, feedback, any sort of communication from anybody about anything. So feel free to write in to us on or text in on 251-928-2111 and tell us what you think of the show, the good things that you like, things that we could do differently, guests that we could have on, subject matter that we could attend to, whatever you like. You know, throw it in there. We'll have a look at it. We mightn't agree with it all. We mightn't say it's possible, but we'll certainly try. And obviously, if you don't like this show, and I know there are some people who have, you know, complained. I know. If you don't like this show, then we have a special hotline for you. And that is that if you could write a letter, a handwritten letter or a postcard, and send it to the Turley Frequency Complaints Department, P.O. Box 697-434 789-321 4567-7760-3 to Kerov General Post Office, Tallinn, Estonia, and our postal service will deal with it there. Can't promise a reply this year, but certainly by next year. Forget all the laughter. Certainly by next year, we will respond to any complaints if the show's still in existence by that time. But seriously, we'd love to hear from you. And do feel free to call in. So today is Friday, in case you haven't noticed. And that's why everybody's in a good mood. That's why Mike's in a good mood, for example. Mike, I bet you're in a good mood today.
I am. You know, every day that I get to do the show with you, that puts me in a great mood. Kevin.
Well, yeah, I know. Look, stop reading. stop reading the lines that I wrote for you.
Oh yes. But, hold on. Kevin is the most amazing host. He should have his own show one day on EWTN Wow, okay. But he has his own show on Archangel Radio, so maybe this show will be on EWTN. It'll get picked up.
Well, the thing is, Mike, as you know, I think that I've had at least two television shows on EWTN, and don't tell anyone else, and I know nobody's listening, so I can say this: I love radio, but I don't really love television.
Yeah,
sorry, I really don't. Doing television for me is like, yeah, okay. Doing radio, I just love it. I love it. And I love you, the listener. But television, you never see anybody. You never, honestly, doing television is like being stuck in a room and somebody shouts action, seriously. And then the cameras roll. You do what you have to do, either to camera or you're interviewing or whatever. And then they stop. And then they run around and take a few shots of you from different angles. And then that's it. And you're in and you're out. And then... No, don't worry, they pay me. But then it comes on the television months later, and this is no lie. You sit watching it thinking, did I really say that? Was that really the answer? Because it is so sort of it's like an out-of-body experience, whereas I think this show is more like being buried alive, would you reckon, Mac?
Look, TV is and film. It's a director's medium, and I think that, you know, theater, obviously, and even radio being the theater of the mind, it's the actor's medium, because you're in charge when you're on stage, when you're on the radio, you're in charge of telling the stories. And we've had so many listeners, by the way, Kevin, and just call up and tell me just how much they enjoy listening to your stories. You really are a phenomenal storyteller, and so with TV, you know, you have an editor who makes the cuts. Like I could, after the show, when I get it ready for the encore, I could make the edits. Like, oh, I didn't like Kevin's answer, or I didn't like his question to this, so let me chop that up. And so this, you know, the editor, me, I get to let the audience hear what I want them to hear.
I'm really glad you said that, Mike, because I was going to ask you, because the encore presentation is 15 minutes long. I wondered what had happened to the other hour and 45 minutes. That was all on the cutting floor, was it?
Right. It didn't make it.
Gotcha. Well, you know, somebody has to edit this stuff, and I guess it's down to you. But listen, tell me, what's on the menu for the Romano family this weekend? Anything special coming up?
I've got to do some cleaning in the garage and around the house. It's just getting organized. You know, having three kids, being homeschooled and all, everything gets messy. So I'm sure I'll do that. But we'll probably, you know, go to a parade or two.
Are on this weekend.
Yeah,
Is that right? The boat parades.
Yeah, the boat parades. So,
which one are you going to?
We haven't decided yet. So, I'll let you know. I'll let you know what we do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing. Do you like doing all that tidying in the garage and stuff?
I like throwing away stuff that because it feels refreshing to the soul. Because over time, as you know, you just collect so much junk, and you're like, where did I get this? How did I end up with this? But it's refreshing. It's to the soul, because we load up our lives, as my friend Barry says. We load up our lives with so much stuff, so much junk, and it's a good time to, you know, get. To be renewed, especially as we prepare for our Lord, and obviously the kids will have a bunch of gifts. So,
do you ever have any of those husband wives discussions where suddenly you both decide that you need to throw out stuff, and then your wife starts throwing out all your stuff? You say, "Hey, hold on." Do you ever have that?
Oh yeah.
It always seems that everybody else's stuff can be thrown out, but my stuff must remain in situ. I have to say that when it comes to the cleaning and sort of throwing out of stuff and organizing and sorting and filing, I'm in the slow learners class. I really am. Always have been. I just can't sort of get, you know, list of priorities. It doesn't really tick that box for me.
Right.
You know, what can you say? We'll ask Karen Eula when she comes on whether she does a lot of tidying. I'm sure that'll be the first question that she will. She's actually a mother of two children, a housewife, mother. So she's got, I mean, how she manages to juggle all these balls in the air, I just don't know. And if you've got a question for Karen, maybe you thought about writing a book. Have you ever thought about writing a book, Mike?
I have, and I've actually wrote a children's book. It's called
Really?
Stinky Feet Pete. And
sorry, repeat the name.
It's called Stinky Feet Pete.
Right.
And so,
teaching it's about kids childhood about, illnesses,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so, I'm just trying to get get it shopped around to various publishers.
Well, listen, Karen won't be listening to this bit. So why don't we pretend that we've got a random call from somebody who's got a book, got a manuscript, i.e. you, and we can see if we can sell it to her over the air and see if she will take it on.
Hey, I'm all about it.
Okay, well, look, she won't have heard this bit. There's only you and me here. So so we will attempt that when she turns up, because she is an editor and she must get submissions. And you know, she must occasionally reject things. I'll tell you something else, which I'm too embarrassed to ask her, and it's this. She used to be an editor, one of the editors, for Dappled Things, which you probably know.
Oh, maybe yeah. We've had many editors from Dappled Things on, sure.
Right. So a lot of very good Catholic fiction, short stories, that sort of thing. Anyway, I wrote to them back in 2015, I think it was. And it wasn't fiction. It was nonfiction. It was probably the wrong thing to send. But I suggested to them they could try something different. So I sent them, you know, which is the classic mistake, right? So it's like sending a sci-fi publisher a romance and saying, why don't you try something different? You know, I mean, it's got as much chance of success as that. Anyway, I got a very standard reply from the editors, which was thanks, but no thanks. Goodbye. And I'm sure, because that was the period, I'm almost certain, when Karen was one of the editors. So what she doesn't know is that she probably rejected my only attempt at getting into Dappled Things. But anyway, that's no. She was right. I mean, I'm not really a fiction writer. I know I've co-authored a novel, but I find fiction writing really difficult. Did you find it difficult writing your novel?
You know, not as difficult as you may think, I guess, because, you know, when I was young, I used to read a lot of Shel Silverstein books, and he did a lot of children's books, Where the Sidewalk Ends and A Light in the Attic. And so because I used to read so much as a child, I thought to myself, well, I want to write something in that kind of vein. So write a book that could be something that you would read in a Shel Silverstein book, i.e. Light in the Attic or Where the Sidewalk Ends. So it wasn't that it kind of you know came to me. And I recently narrated a children's book called An Emerald Tale, The Emerald Kingdom, A Tale of a Dragon and a Unicorn. And so that was fun getting to put all the sound effects in there and voice it. And so hopefully that will be out on Audible maybe sometime next year. But I enjoy children's books. And being that I've got children of my own, I enjoy reading to my kids.
I think that's the key, Mike, isn't it? Because I wouldn't know where to start with a children's book. Somebody asked me if I could write a children's book for them. They were looking for somebody to write something. I said, I just can't do it. I have no idea how to get into that mindset, you know, and not having children. And it's been a while since I was young enough to read children's books. Not that I read many. But I just, so I take my hat off to you twice, Mike. One for writing anybody who puts fiction work together. It's a wonderful thing, but it's hard work. But secondly, children's work or young adults or anything like that, that is a world, that's a universe I just don't understand. Give me vampires, gothic horror, blood, and I'm happy. But children, not so sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, we're about to go for a break. When we come back, we've got Karen with us, Karen Eula. Do think about calling in. If you've got a manuscript sitting under your pillow and you want to talk to somebody about it, now's your moment. And we may even have a surprise caller in who's already got one, but we won't let on who it is, right? 888-928-0881. Back after these words.
lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Robert Overmeyer, manager of Ascension Funeral Home and a member of St. Pius X Parish and a proud supporter of Archangel Radio. At Ascension Funeral Home, we are dedicated to providing personalized service in a warm and caring environment. Our experienced and dedicated staff can work with you to ensure your loved one's funeral is complete with all the traditions and rituals of the Catholic Church. For details, call Ascension Funeral Home at 634-8055 or visit ascensionfuneralgroup.com.
If you're looking for an adventure, consider Coastal Segway Adventures. Located on the beautiful Hugh Branyon Backcountry Trail, Segway operators can explore nature in Gulf State Park. Coastal Segway Adventures also offers kayak and paddleboard rentals for a fun-filled, hassle-free day on Lake Shelby. To make your reservation, visit CoastalSegwayAdventures.com or call 251-509-TOUR. That's 251-509-8687. Coastal Segway Adventures. Coast the Gulf. Coast life.
We have to have confidence that the power does not reside in us. It resides in the Lord. We're being faithful to the Lord. The early apostles, did everybody just say, oh, we just love what you're saying? No. And it's okay. And we shouldn't expect that to be the case. That would be foolish. We have to recognize that we're going to run into difficulties. But the thing is, by love and by having these conversations of consequence with our neighbors, with our family members, or whoever they might be, we can really make a positive impact because the truth will set you free, and that's a good thing.
LA Catholic Morning, weekdays at 7 a.m. on Archangel Radio.
Loved this film.
Do you?
It came out in 1984. I was 8 years old. Yeah, you do the math. But I had that. I think I've recorded that and played it and watched it. God knows how many times as a youth. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Well, I've never seen
treasure.
It.
Oh, you never haven't? You haven't seen the? Oh,
I haven't
Kevin,
seen
do
it,
yourself a favor. I'm sure it's on Netflix or one of the.
I'm sure it is.
Amazon,
whatever. Now, listen, I've had a message about problems with our streaming. If you're experiencing problems with your streaming, don't despair. I'm advised by our engineering department today that somebody is coming out to look at it. But you got to remember that Archangel Radio is unusual because we broadcast throughout the world. So Archangel Radio has its own satellite, as you know, which orbits the Earth. But in the last couple of days, it broke out of that orbit and was last seen heading towards Neptune. And that's why there is some problems with the streaming. Mike is about to call NASA when this show ends, and we'll get it all sorted out later today. So do not despair. Now, talking of fictions, Karen Euler writes novels and screenplays and is an editor at Chrism Press. Before that, she was the managing editor of Dapple Things Journal, which we all know about. And she has an MFA in screenwriting, and we'll talk about screenwriting later. But she's also a church musician, and therefore, not surprisingly, she is a classically trained soprano. So she's going to give Mike a run for his money. But I ask myself, is there no end to this woman's talents? And there doesn't seem to be, because she's also a housewife housewife, a mother of two children, and a native of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where she says, and this is the bit I didn't understand, she says she is an LSU Tiger and a USC Trojan. Now, I didn't understand what that is, but I'm reliably informed by some members of the team here that they are threatening to cut her line the minute she comes on. But I will not let them do it. Karen, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. I'm happy to be here. And I did wonder if Alabama really knew that they were getting an LSU Tiger.
Oh, did not know Karen, that.
Karen, don't open that.
I was not informed for a good reason.
Listen, it's really nice. It's really nice being the European in the midst of all of this, because I can confidently say, I mean, I've learned a bit about American sports. I mean, I do now know that the most important person on the baseball field is a quarterback. I know that. But the rest is a mystery. The rest is a mystery. And in some ways, I'm rather glad it will stay a mystery. But anyway, Karen, it's really good to speak to you. You know, I really do mean it. You're one of those authors that I have been really looking forward to speaking to. And the joys of having a radio show is that I can say, hello, Karen.
Hello, Kevin. Yes, it's really lovely to talk to you in person.
Now, I have a very serious question for you, Karen, and I'm going to, because people say it to me, I'm going to throw it your way. What's a nice Catholic girl like you doing writing about Gothic horrors?
I know, right? But it turns out that if you really want to delve into sin and darkness and therefore redemption, Gothic horror is a great way to do it. That the power of Gothic horror is that you can embody concepts like the fall and sinfulness and all these abstractions, and in a way that we haven't experienced in our own lives, and therefore it is both new and at the same time very familiar. And so you can use the, you know, vampires and werewolves and all these sorts of things as a way to sort of take a little bit of a step back and look at what sinfulness really is, and therefore how grace really works.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Karen. And you're almost quoting verbatim the sort of thing that I would reply. The other thing which I would say, I mean, you're probably a lot younger than me, but growing up, I remember in the 70s and 80s watching films on television and such like, the prevailing ethos was one of secularism, atheism, materialism. They were all the heroes, all the characters. There was no supernatural dimension except in the horror genre. And I think that's what attracted me. Do you know what I mean?
I do, exactly, because horror is the one place where you still find at least the trappings of Catholicism, even in secular fiction, secular movies, secular television. I did not watch Midnight Mass because I was bored to tears when I tried, but that was probably one of the more recent forays into, you know, horror where you must have Catholicism mixed in. And although it's usually done really badly, and frequently the Catholicism turns out to be part of the evil if you're watching secular films or whatever, the truth is that it's a recognition of the fact that when you are faced with true evil, you don't turn to Bob the evangelical pastor down the street. We know where the solution lies in our cultural bones. We know that you have to go to the church if you want to find answers to the problem of evil.
That is so true, Karen. And, you know, it's a cliche almost that they always call the Catholic priest in when the demon is loose in the house or the exorcism is needed or whatever. But there's actually, I mean, you probably know that the film The Exorcist and the novel that came before it, William Peter Blatty, was allegedly based on a true case in the Midwest in the 1940s. And it involved a Lutheran family. And they called out their Lutheran minister, and the Lutheran minister could do nothing. In fact, he exacerbated the problem, they suggested.
I'm sure.
So they, as Protestants, had to go and ask for the local Catholic priest, and that's where the story sort of started. If any non-Catholics are listening and you're offended by that, call in 888-928-0881, because deliverance, I know, is in the name of the Lord, and we know that. But certainly in Hollywood and in literature, I'm afraid, it's the good old Catholic priest and the exorcist that Now, can I ask you, Karen, have you ever actually met an exorcist?
Not that I'm aware. Of course, most of them don't go around advertising that they're exorcists, and I've met plenty of priests, but not that I know of.
Well, I had the pleasure, it's actually an interview I did for the Register, I had the pleasure of meeting Father Jeremy Davis, who died a few weeks ago. And he was the, at one point, he was the only exorcist in London. Can you imagine?
Goodness, and, what a job.
And I interviewed him a number of times, and the stories he told me. The thing was, he was a convert to the faith, and he was one of those Englishmen that just, you know, totally relaxed, reserved, never really emotional, perfect for the role of exorcist. But he had also been a psychiatrist before he'd become a priest. I mean, he was the living embodiment of the character in The Exorcist, right?
Right, of the character in The Exorcist.
But what he also said to me, which is a more serious point, he wasn't so much interested in the kind of Hollywood excesses, but he told me very clearly about the portholes of evil, the things that attract evil. And they were sins. They were things like pornography, abortion, and these type of things, you know, that bring in evil. So when people get upset with you or me for writing about vampires or about fairy tale type situations and stories about werewolves or whatever, I think they're missing the point. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. You have to be able... If you're going to, you know, the first step to repenting is to identify that you are, in fact, a sinner. If you're going to simply whitewash everything and say we're never going to look at evil in the face and call it by its name, how are you even going to bring yourself to the confessional, you know? And I think that's where Gothic gives us such a great doorway to be able to explore these things, as I said before, in a way where we're able to take a step back and see them with fresh eyes, because they're not the same thing that we encounter every day. And we can really use that as a way to understand how evil operates and therefore how God operates and how grace operates.
That's right. And I mean, I suppose as well, I mean, in the culture that we're in, to remind people that there is good and evil, right?
100%, because that's where, you know, when you live in a culture that wants to say own your truth and everything is relative and it all depends on who you are, that's another thing that horror, even in the secular world, there is good and there is evil, and there's no getting away from the distinction between the two.
I know. I mean, it's. I mean, you're so right. I mean, I've had 40 years of, well, Kevin, that's your truth. You know, that sort of discussion.
Right.
Kevin, you know, you shouldn't impose your truth on other people. You know, we've all got a point of view. And I said, well, how did that work out with Hitler?
Exactly.
But anyway... Now, listen, we're speaking with Karen Eula, who's an author, screenwriter, a mother, a managing editor of this, that, the, and the other, Chrism Press. He's everything and anything. If you've got a question about literature, about writing, about the horror genre, about Gothic fiction, about its suitability for different ages, now's your chance to call Karen on 888-928-0881. Or if you want to, text me on 251-928-2111, and I'd only be too happy to serve up in a silver slipper the question to Karen. Now, Karen, you have written two novels.
Yes.
One of them has a rather... Sorry?
I have two that are published and one that I've finally finished, but it's not.
I was going to come to that because I'd heard a rumor about this, but you've two published novels. You're absolutely right. You're such an editor. But one of them has a title which I am absolutely certain you got, as we say over this part of the world, some grief for, i.e. some complaint about, and that is Jennifer the Damned. What's that all about?
Well, it is about a vampire, and the entire concept of the book is that she believes because she is a vampire, she is damned. So the title kind of worked.
So this is a vampire who believes... Sorry, Karen, this is a vampire who believes in...
Yes, she has actually been raised by nuns. So
wow.
She actually believes the doctrines of the Catholic Church 100%, but she believes that because of her nature as a vampire, she is excluded from any possibility of grace.
Interesting. That's a really interesting concept. So, I mean, how does that work then with the Eucharist?
Exactly. That's the one thing that she believes, because she was taught by her vampire, quote-unquote, mother, the person who turned her into a vampire, that if she eats or drinks the Eucharist, she will die. Because, of course, it is God. And
body, blood, soul, and divinity.
The body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ, and therefore the antithesis of the evil that she has become. So it will kill her. However, it is the most tempting thing on the face of the earth for a vampire to smell the blood of Christ. And you can imagine that this is a problem when you live in a convent.
Yeah. Did you get a lot of pushback on this?
I expected to, and almost the entire time I was writing it was kind of sitting there going, please don't strike me with lightning bolts, God. You know my heart is in the right place. You know where this goes. And honestly, I haven't gotten nearly what I expected in terms of pushback, because people who have actually read the book have said, oh, that's what you were doing.
Well, that's the thing, Karen. It's when people actually read the book as opposed to read the headline and think, I'm going to criticize this, you know, or why can you write about this? Because I think your novel, Jennifer the Damned, actually won awards, didn't it?
Yeah, it has it won something from Catholic Reads as the best horror mm-hmm. novel, and can't remember if that one won any other ones. But yes, it has won a couple of awards, and I've actually had quite a few priests and even one bishop tell me how much they appreciated the book, which meant the world to me. Mm-hmm. So, because as I said, it's a scary thing to step out on that limb and say, I have this idea, and I know, because I'm a faithful Catholic and I know that that's where it's coming from, and I'm bathing this whole process of writing it in prayer, I know what it's meant to do, but finding out, that other people actually see it and understand it the way it's meant to be understood and don't simply arrive with judgment and criticism before they've even picked up page one was really an astonishing thing to me.
Absolutely. Just hold that thought, Karen. I hope you can stay for the next segment.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're talking to Karen Yula this morning, a writer, editor, housewife, mother, you name it, she is it. And you could speak to her as well on 888-928-0881. Karen, quick question. Do you like Neverending Story?
I think I did. It's been a really long time since I've seen it.
Well, this music is for you. Back after these words.
Tim Simmons here with Tim Simmons State Farm. We're a proud sponsor of Archangel Radio. Tim Simmons State Farm provides insurance and financial services throughout Baldwin and Mobile County. We are located at 356 Morphy Avenue across from the Children's Splash Pad in Fairhope. I invite you to call me or one of my licensed agents for complete personal and professional services. Call 251-928-1400. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Here's Dr. Brandon O'Donnell, owner of Alabama Smile Design.
Mike, I'm blessed. I have an awesome wife that helps me run a practice. I have a great team, and that there are people in the community that think of me as an authority in dental technology. And I'm able to teach these guys on this technology that a lot of them don't even know about. When they do know about it, they don't understand how to use it or how they can use it. And I'm able to help these guys come to the future, which is now.
Alabama Smile Design. Beautiful smiles to match a beautiful city.
Monday on LA Catholic Morning, David Bonagura talks about St. Edmund Campion, Mark Armstrong shares the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and Patrick Brown discusses his article, Are Marriage and Parenthood Only for the Wealthy?
LA Catholic Morning, weekdays at 7 a.m. on Archangel Radio.
This is Barry Little, Director of Adult Religious Education at St. Lawrence Parish, and I invite you to spend a moment inside Catholicism. What are the tools you need for your RCIA pilgrimage? First, start going to Mass. Secondly, get a Catholic Bible. You will actually need to read it. Start with the Gospel of John, the fourth book in the New Testament. You also need to ask for help with what you are reading, as we hear in the story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Then Philip ran up to the chariot and heard the man reading Isaiah the prophet. "Do you understand what you are reading?" Philip asked. "How can I?" he said, "unless someone explains it to me." This has been Inside Catholicism. I'm Barry Little.
Kitchen cooking breakfast for the queen. The queen was in the parlor playing piano for the children of the king.
We are not crying this morning because we have Karen Eula with us as our special guest here on Friday's edition of the Turley Frequency, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Karen, I have a question that has been texted to me by a listener, and it says the following. Why does Karen think that vampires remain so popular even today?
I think it's a representation of our spiritual hunger in our society. That when you strip away the cultural context where everyone is Christian, whether Catholic or of another denomination, but at least sharing that common bond in Christ and knowing where to turn for answers, when you take that away and you end up with this secular post-Christian world, what's left is hunger for something beyond. You know, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee. The hunger doesn't go away. And if you can't fill it with God because you have this new belief, quote unquote, new belief that everything is materialist and secular, then you have to start looking for the beyond somewhere else. And so the obvious thing that happens is that the occult creeps in.
That's right.
People start turning to the other side of the equation in the spiritual world. So I think that, you know, people say, oh, all of these things, this Gothic is so damaging. Well, it certainly can be when it's taken out of its proper context and made to be the only side of the coin in the spiritual realm. But I do think that's where it comes from, is just that innate spiritual hunger that keeps us looking for what else is out there.
I couldn't agree more, and I think there's I had to defend what I had written, and I extended that a little bit by saying that we have to first of all meet people where they are, and you know you've done that in your writing as well. We're often dealing with people who have no knowledge of Christianity, never mind the Catholic faith, and there's no point hitting them over the head with a catechism, and saying you will believe.
Right.
You have to meet them where they're at. But there's also something about the whole myth of the vampire, which is about blood and a distortion of the text in Deuteronomy about blood is the life. And it's in the book of Dracula, as you know, and all the rest of it. And it's a distortion of that, whereas we Catholics know that the blood is the life, but it's the blood of the Lamb that's the life. So this is a kind of infernal lie that the vampire is subject to. He's a victim of this. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's 100% the way I view it. You know, a vampire represents the anti-Eucharist. They drink the blood of the unwilling victims in order to achieve what is not really eternal life. Whereas Catholics drink the blood of the one willing victim who can save us in order to achieve what really is eternal life. It's a complete inversion of the Eucharist, which is why that particular myth resonates so deeply in our culture, more than, you know, say werewolves or zombies, although of course those things are also out there and very popular in our culture too, but vampires just don't seem to go away. Well, it's because they represent a particular spiritual hunger, and that particular spiritual hunger is the ultimate one for the Eucharist, for union with Christ.
You're listening to Karen Yule here live and exclusive on the Turley Frequency, coming out of Archangel Radio, blasting across the world via our satellite and various other wonderful things like mobile apps. Karen, I got you on the show today ostensibly to talk about fairy tales, but that was just an excuse to chat to you, to be honest with you. But it is Advent after all, and Christmas is coming. I'm trying to make sure we don't go into a Christmas mode too early. I'm sure you try this with your children. You don't get too into Christmas before it's Christmas, right? But Christmas will come, and Christmas and fairy tales kind of go together. And I know you've written a sort of novel fairy tale, Cinderella, or Cinderella. I have to pronounce that correctly, Cinderella. But what sort of fairy tales would you recommend for children of all ages in the coming feasts ahead?
Oh, well, I love fairy tales because, you know, who doesn't love happy endings? And I also, when you really get back down into fairy tales and you start reading some of the source material, you know, you go and read Grimm's and things like that, fairy tales are not the Disney version, and you do end up with a lot of the same elements that you see in Gothic horror.
That's right.
If you're looking for something that you want, you know, for your children or for your teens, Cinderella is a great one. That one is actually clean enough that you can give it to your children. Don't give them Jennifer the Dance. And there are lots of other writers doing fairy tales, both in a Catholic and a Christian space. You can literally just Google them, and there's I'm trying to
what would be some of your classic sorry Karen, what would be some of the classic fairy tales that you think are really appropriate for this time of year that children of all ages will enjoy? I mean, there's the classic, I mean, a kind of a fairy tale is Christmas Carol, I'm sure you'd agree, which always gets trotted out every single year, right?
And then, you know, Sleeping Beauty is another good one that revolves around the birth of a child and bringing gifts.
Yes.
Let's see, what else would we have that would fall into that sort of nativity kind of thing?
Why do you think the Germans were so good at all this? I mean, first of all, I mean, a lot of them do seem to be Germanic in origin, a lot of these fairy tales. Why do you think that is? Is that something to do with Yule and that whole sort of Winterfest type idea that it's even pre-Christian?
I think it has a lot to do with Germanic pre-Christian culture, and they had quite a number of various monsters and ghoulies and ghosties that they thought inhabited the forest, you know, the Black Forest back in the pre-Christian era. There's also a lot of them that come from Charles Perrault, who was a French author much later. And he's the one who wrote the version of Cinderella that Disney adapted. And so you also have a good bit of French influence in fairy tales too. And that's sort of where you get more of the princesses and the courts and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you get that played out in Wagner and even Tolkien. I mean, it keeps perpetuating, right? These kind of pagan myths that mercifully others have taken, Tolkien took and sort of twisted or turned into more Christian dimensions. But they have their origins in the dim and distant past, a bit like some aspects of Christmas, which were pagan originally, but then have become Christianized by the church down through the years. So there's nothing new in this, is there really?
No, nothing new at all. And that's what we do. You know, as Catholics, the word means universal. So we take the good from everything that we find, no matter where it started, because all humans have some innate concept of good. And no matter what they have come up with, there's going to be some elements of good in it because they were created in the image of Christ. So why not?
Absolutely. And I would go further and say that, you know, Catholic universal, absolutely. But it also means we're not frightened of anything. We're not frightened of Gothic horrors. We're as at home in Gothic horror as we are in pious literature. It's because we are Catholics. Now, listen, one of the other things that you are, talking of things new, is an editor, Chrism Press. Tell us a bit about that.
So Chrism Press is an imprint of Whitefire Publishing, and we are devoted exclusively to fiction from Catholic and Orthodox Christian points of view. Whitefire Publishing has been around for about 17-ish years now, and they print both fiction and nonfiction from Christians across the spectrum. But I and the other founding editors saw a need to really include more Catholic and Orthodox voices in a Christian fiction context. And so we opened our doors for submissions in 2020. We put out our first books in 2021, so we're still very new. We have 7 books out now, and our goal is to fling wide the doors. You can find any genre at Chrism Press, and if we don't have it yet, then it's coming. For example, our first mystery series will come out, the first book will come out next year. And if we don't have it yet, it just means we haven't found a book that fit that genre yet. But we have romance, we have history, we have contemporary, we have humor, we have drama, we have sci-fi, we have gothic horror, you know, you name it, we have it. And if we don't have it yet, it's coming. And we want to show that spectrum of what the Catholic imagination and the Orthodox imagination that are informed by this really sacramental view of reality can do. If you take off the, you know, constraints of, oh, you know, everything must be Flannery O'Connor and Graham Greene. Well, no, not everything. Will we publish that? Yes. But we also want fun YA, and we want mysteries, and we want to just have a good time and remind people that reading is fun.
Yes, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, I was music to my ears when I was reading about Chrism Press. I loved your tagline, anoint your imagination. I thought that's wonderful. But
yes,
you're absolutely right. I mean, I've said this, and I don't mean this dismissively, but Catholic fiction has to have everything. It has to have the Graham Greens and the Flannery O'Connors and the Evelyn Waughs and the Tolkien. Yes, yes, we need all of that. But we also need people who just write a good potboiler, who write a good romance, who write a good fiction page-turner, which is here today, gone tomorrow. But we need all of these people using their talents, using their God-given gifts, because if Catholics or Christians don't buy these books, they're going to go and buy other books which will not share their worldview, or if they're younger people, may distort their worldview. So I couldn't agree more with you. But listen, we had somebody who was on our just before you came on, Karen, and he admitted that he had actually written a manuscript, and he can't unfortunately call in to speak to you. But how does somebody go about, I mean, let's say this person has this manuscript, it's a fiction manuscript, what's the process by which they get published?
So if you want to be published by Chrism Press, you simply go to chrismpress.com and click on the tab that says submissions, and we have all of the information that you need right there. Please do read everything in the submissions tab before you send us anything. But we do not require you to have an agent. If you do have an agent, great, we'll take that too. But you can simply send us a query letter, and the instructions are right there on our website.
And so basically send the submission in, send your bank details as well for the royalty checks, and you're done.
Well, no, it's not quite that simple. You first send us a query, and usually occasionally it's one of the other editors who answers the query and would request a proposal. And if we like what we see in the proposal, then we'll request your full manuscript. And then you sit there and wait for many months while our part-time workers on our Chrism Press team read it and get back to you. So it's a lengthy process, and I'm not going to tell you that it's, you know, a quick overnight thing, but it is a simple thing in terms of there's not a lot of procedure to it. Just go read what's on the website.
You know, it is. So submissions and submission pages must, you know, for the writer, they're a sort of modern form of mortification, really, because, you know, the submission process. I know a writer, I'm not going to name who it is, who has been published many, many times. And yet I was told by that author that every time the submission goes in, the heart sinks. Right.
Oh, because it does.
Always. It does. And this is a writer who's been award-winning and published many, many volumes, but it never gets easier, that submission process. It really doesn't.
So,
but it probably doesn't get easier for you either as an editor. I mean, without going into details, you must see some pretty awful submissions, Karen.
Of course we do. And, you know, what can you say except thanks, but no thanks. But for all the aspiring writers out there, if it makes you feel any better, I got a rejection letter just earlier this week. It never ends.
Uh-huh. Surely that was a misprint.
I wish it had been, but no, it was just not the right publisher for that book. So we will.
Well, this is the other thing which most aspiring writers don't understand. Because you will have got them, right, which is the standard issue submission, which they have sent to every single publisher under the sun. And they haven't read the submission guidelines. They don't know what you publish, but they've just thought that you'd like to read this submission. Do you get those?
Oh, yeah. For example, I get Chrism Press publishes only fiction and only book-length fiction. I get short stories. I get nonfiction. I get poetry. It's like, we don't publish this. So, yes, please read the guidelines.
Yeah, it's amazing that if you can't even read the guidelines, what are the chances of you actually being able to work with that person? Because that's the next stage, right? The editors have to work with the writers, and that's always, it can be a very pleasant, but it can also have a little bit of teething problems as editing takes place and copy editing and all the rest of it. But that's great that Chrism Press is there for people. Are we allowed to know about your latest project, or is that still hush-hush?
No, it's not hush-hush. I've spent the past 5 years since I finished Cinderella writing a historical fiction novel set during the French Revolution. So it took me 5 years because there was that much research involved, and I had to go to France, and that got canceled because of COVID. And it's finally done, and it's out. I have my agent putting it out on submission now. So we're hoping, Chrism has already accepted it, but we were hoping to get it to someone bigger this time and make a bit more of a splash.
Well, maybe when it is splashing around, you'll come back and talk to us then, Karen. That would be delightful. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
It's just my name, Karen Ullo, ULLO.com.
That's wonderful. Karen, thank you so much for coming on the Turley Frequency, and I do hope you come back again.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It was great.
That's Karen Ullo. When we come back, we are going to be going Divine Mercy, and you're invited.